I really hope that the cat decides to be an asshole and scream during this episode like he did all night long.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about the HBO comedy Hacks, a show starring Gene Smart and Hannah Einbender. We're gonna spoil it.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God, without Tim. My name is Molly Glover. I'm one of your hosts. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Also not Tim.
And that's it. No one else. That's
no
all.
No people.
Just the two of us. We are going to talk this week about a show called Hacks. It's on HBO Max, or Max, as they want us to call it. It's okay to dead name companies. That's the only thing that's okay to dead name.
Yeah. It's still
They're
Twitter.
Not people. You know, it's still Twitter.
HBO.
It's still HBO. And so Hacks is a really fun show that we've been watching. Season 3 just ended, and it's one of those things where it doesn't feel like we can get Tim to watch 3 seasons of a television show to get caught up just so we can record a podcast. So since we had this opportunity, while Tim is still on vacation, he's back very soon, we decided to talk about this show. This last season was a fucking banger. So it's and we just learned like yesterday that it got picked up for season 4.
Hey,
which is very exciting.
Because the season 3 has such a good hook.
Yeah. So Hacks is a comedy show about stand-up comedy. Kind of about comedy in general, but specifically stand-up comedy and writing comedy.
I think, you know, how comedy ages and evolves is a major through line through the all 3 seasons.
Absolutely. So the star of the show is Gene Smart. In the sense that she plays Deborah Vance, which is sort of like it's like Joan Rivers and I'm blanking on the other older comedian name. Phyllis Diller.
Sure.
And some of those older, like when people who are my age, I'm in my mid-40s, when people who are my age were young, these were the old, already kind of old comedians, right? Especially the women comedians who you knew about. So she has, currently she's playing like every night at a Vegas hotel. She's got a residency and she does the same shtick that she's been doing since the 60s and 70s. Like, you know, mother-in-law jokes and, you know, oh, my husband and I'm a dumb woman. And
it's like, I wouldn't say it's offensive comedy for the time.
Mm-mm.
It's maybe a little risque. Nowadays, you would say it's offensive. And you wouldn't even say it's offensive comedy.
Yeah.
You'd say it's comedy that
it's offending
because it hasn't aged well.
And it's also so boring and so tropey.
Right.
Like, that's
yeah.
the main reason it's offensive is because it's like, it's, you know, take my wife, please, you know, kinds of a... you know, things.
Super, super lazy by today's standards.
Yes.
Because none of those are new jokes. None of them. I mean, not that they were like, and I want to get into the whole, like, it was okay then because of context
right.
or product of its time. Like, it's not even relevant, really. It's more like,
it's more like the way that like older stuff in the on sitcoms, like Archie Bunker stuff, like the way he talks and the way he's quote unquote racist.
I mean, he is racist.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the time, it didn't feel it felt like everyone knew an Archie Bunker. It wasn't.
Right.
It was like, oh, he just talks just like my dad or like my friends or whatever. He wasn't a singular strange individual who you don't see very often.
There's a comedian that really stands out to me that I feel like she's based on, and I just can't place her name, that was also Southern, and her whole shtick was also very, you know, her wealth had nothing to do with her shtick.
Oh, she had blonde hair. Brett Butler,
yes.
I think,
yeah,
was her name.
Maybe a bit. Yeah.
Yep.
So, But yeah, now, like you're saying, you know, and we don't want to go too far, right. far past the premise without getting into spoiler territory. Right.
The rest. Oh, sorry.
But it's she is, you know, mega wealthy, very successful in this kind of the final phase of her life in a sense.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just to the point where it's almost like a parody of wealth, the way you imagine like a Hollywood star would be.
She has a QVC, her own QVC brand. Yes, she has a brand manager. She has mansions.
And she hires a writer to help her freshen up her act.
She basically gets told by her manager that she needs, she's getting a writer because she's kind of a hack.
Yeah. Her agent, who is a younger guy who works at a very prestigious firm, is like the prestigious firm is saying that she's not getting enough new stuff. She's not, you know, all she's doing is the same old tired shtick and they want something new. So he finds an up and coming, a comedy writer who's very, very like known on Twitter, and she can't find work because she made an insensitive tweet that blew up and went viral, and now no one will hire her. So, and she ends up working with Deborah, and all of season one is a very antagonist relationship where they are, duking it out because Ava is, in every sense of the term, including pejoratively, very woke. Ava's a white lady who, I would say she probably calls herself a liberal, who is very consciously woke of all the time about everything.
She's very concerned with being perceived as an ally, and it's not. It doesn't seem motivated by her wanting to be a good person. I wouldn't say she's a bad person, but her motivation isn't so much like social justice as it is being seen optics. As an advocate of social justice.
And she is a lesbian.
Bi.
She's bi, you're right. Yeah. That's right. Oh my God, I did bi erasure.
You did a bi erasure,
I did a
Molly.
Bi erasure. She's bi, but it seems like she predominantly dates women.
She like begrudgingly likes a guy every once in a while. Yeah. It's kind of.
And so that is the premise. So from here on, I'm going to say, if that is interesting to you, stop listening to this episode and go watch Hacks and then come back and listen to the rest because we're going to spoil the shit out of it here on out.
All three seasons.
Okay. So season one, Deborah versus Ava, and they're fighting all the time about what she should put in her tired old act. And she's trying to figure out. And at the same time, Deborah Vance is like talking to Ava and being kind of like, oh, you're so young. You young people don't get it. You don't know how it was for us, especially as a woman. Like, you know, comedy was different back then and you all are ruining it. That is an attitude we still hear today. So it's very cool. I love the fact that in this first season, they are like, it feels very antagonistic. They start to form a friendship, you know, and all that. And it starts to feel like the show starts out being really almost tropey where it's like, oh, I get it. This lady doesn't want to change. And this lady wants her to change. And that's the whole push.
Generational conflict.
Yeah. But they actually do start to form a relationship and it's nice. And by the end of season one, they're working together happily.
Well, I mean, I feel like there's always... They always have an arc in all three seasons where they're not getting along, they are getting along, and then something happens to make them not get along. And then, you know, the next season is the reverse of that, right? Mm-hmm. They're not getting along, they're getting along, they're not getting along, and then it ends with them getting along again, right?
Yeah, pretty much every time.
And I feel like they do a pretty good job not making it feel manufactured.
Right.
Right. It doesn't feel like they're just looking for an excuse to make them fight. Though I did think in this third season, you and I got to the point where we were like, I hope there's some progress here in the relationship. This is...
Yeah.
It's going to start getting boring soon.
The lawsuit stuff was boring to me.
Yeah. And then... By the end of the third season, that the way they have that relationship hook for the fourth season is interesting again.
Yeah.
They do a really good job not wearing it out. It gets really close a couple times.
I agree. And I think that one of the things I like about in season one, so we get introduced to like Deborah's daughter, DJ, who's played by Caitlin, I can never remember her last name. She's married to Rob McElhenney. She's in It's Always Sunny. She plays D.
She's
I just don't know her last name. Yes. But she plays the daughter and the much, you know, Hollywood starlet treated poorly daughter. She gets DJ gets the Drew Barrymore treatment for sure. Brought to lots of parties, people giving her drugs, people, you know, ignoring her constantly. Caitlin Olsen. Yeah. That's it. I couldn't remember it because it's such a Minnesotan last name.
It is very.
Yeah. But and so like getting to meet her, and you start to get these peaks in season one. He gets these peaks into Deborah's, like the who damage she really she's done.
Yeah.
Like the people in her wake. And we hear this like vague stuff about how her sister cheated on her husband. You know, like her sister stole her husband and it's she this awful
down,
thing.
She burned down a house.
Mm-hmm. She burned down a house. It seems like it might be like Left Eye style.
A jealous. Yeah. Out of jealousy or rage.
And like then she got the, you know, and you know, she was almost a late night host and she lost it. And so there's all these little peaks we get that really they keep doing that. We blossom more and more. But we also start to get like peeks into Ava's life. And who she is as a person, as but like she's making all those mistakes now. All that stuff Deborah yeah. did when she was young, all those mistakes she made and the time she was fiery and crazy. And like we're seeing Ava do that now. And it's kind of cool to see those echoes.
And it's different mistakes for a different age. Right. But right. like so, you know, it's interesting. Deborah has this fucked up relationship with her daughter who. I don't want to say she has ruined because yeah. she's not like ruined as a person,
right.
but you know, her professional career as a comedian on the road and everything was fairly neglectful. And they talk a lot about, you know, that generational trauma that her daughter has experienced kind of at her behalf. And meanwhile, the young comedian, I forgot her name. Ava's mom, you start to find out, completely ignores her and doesn't recognize any of her talent and says really nice and kind things about other women in her life all the time.
Yeah.
And just is very uninterested and uninvested in Ava's life. And so you get this thing where, you know, one is kind of like a mother figure and the other is kind mm-hmm. of a daughter figure. Mm-hmm. And they're both the relationships with their actual mother and actual daughter are kind of fucked up. And yeah. so like, they see that in each other's behavior. Like Deborah sees the way Ava's mom treats her and actually acknowledges that it's shitty, which is a big fucking deal to Ava.
Yeah.
And Ava helps Deborah process some of how she raised her daughter and you make it into some incredibly successful comedy.
I also think what's really interesting is like the attitude toward comedy, what's funny, who gets to be funny in this. For example, when they're doing the roast of Deborah Vance and they want DJ, her daughter, to be there and she's discouraging DJ from doing it. She's like, no, you won't be good. You're not a comedian. You won't be any good. These people are going to, they're going to eat you alive. You can't handle this. And Deborah has all these like, just like written in stone comedy rules for herself in her head where she's like, comedians don't do this and they will never agree to that and they won't laugh at
that. Because I'm a woman comedian, I can and can't do this.
But like she also hasn't been paying attention to any current comedy at all,
right?
Other than to see it as competition and poo-poo it. So like she doesn't know what's funny now. She doesn't have that. She's not plugged into that. So she's constantly making missteps where she's assuring that something will never work and it goes over really well for whatever reason, whether it's luck or timing. We all know comedy, the same joke can kill or fall flat depending on your audience. The
roast is such a great episode for that because even as the audience, as DJ is explaining her material to various groups of people that she's writing because she's going to write her own roast material. Yeah. And everyone is like, this is a bad idea. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to do like a catch line. I'm thinking like, what a cunt.
Yeah. What a cunt.
And they're all like,
every good comedian has a catchphrase.
Every good comedian at a roast has a catchphrase. Mine's going to be what a cunt. And everyone tells her not to, and she does anyway, and it's super fucking funny.
Like, it kills.
Like, it kills, yeah. And she does it with great comedic delivery and good timing.
Well, Caitlin Olsen's amazing. Yeah. Like, she's so good at being a very funny, unfunny person.
Yes.
Like, because that's kind of how Dee is, like, oh, yeah. And It's Always Sunny. Oh,
yeah. The laughs are always at Dee's expense.
A character that I did not like for the longest time, and I really came around on, is Kayla.
We hated her first season.
The first season, she's a recurring character who's just a spoiled little bitch.
Jimmy, the manager of Ava and Deborah, his assistant, who is the daughter of the owner of the management firm.
And she's very much a daddy's girl, and he's got that whole, like, you better take care of my little girl.
She is a nepo baby, the purest definition of, and... this is her, you know, cutting her teeth in the industry by being his assistant, who is also incredibly inappropriately hitting on him the entire time.
Like, borderline assault. Like, definitely sexual harassment. It is. And there are times where it almost feels like assault, way he is. Yeah.
She's absolutely sexually assaulting the shit out of him in a few.
Harassing. I mean, I don't want people to be turned off thinking that there's sexual assault in this show.
No, okay.
There's no sex in this show like that.
No, she touches him, and she, like, shows up wearing, like, inappropriate clothes like in an environment that is.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so much worse to describe than it is to see, because it's kind of, it sounds bad to say because it's played for laughs, but like, the whole time he's very adamant, like, I'm a professional, we're professionals, like, Kayla, knock it off, you're my assistant, whatever. And she just doesn't hear anything he has to say, not about this specifically, but about everything.
Yeah.
Like taking his messages and making reservations for meetings and stuff like that. Like, she's in her own little world for everything.
But she has a great character arc where she really comes into her own. And I think, too, Jimmy starts to understand that, like, what she's doing is attention seeking. And it's like a way that she's learned to attention seek from somebody is to, like, be, like, sexual and to be flirtatious with him and everything, and she doesn't, and I think he starts giving her attention for other reasons, which makes that go away, and it's nice.
He finds a way to constructively direct her enthusiasm, and once she kind of is encouraged in that way and, you know, runs with it, she ends up being incredibly valuable to our protagonists and to her boss, and their relationship develops. The character she is in the second season is so much deeper than the first, and even deeper still in the third season. In the third season, I feel like the stuff you find out about her and the bullying and the, like, mean rich girls and stuff like that, like, I feel like everything is her. She makes even more sense as a character.
I really like, the show has a lot of really good queer representation. The show has a lot of, and funny, like, not just, like, tender queer representation, but, like, funny, raunchy, normalized queer representation. One thing I don't love about it is, and I was thinking about this more and more as I was reading through these cast lists, are, so the two protagonists are white, and then Jimmy the agent is white.
Yep.
And Kayla's white.
Yep.
And the boss of the agency is white. And the owner of the casino is white.
Yep.
And everybody who I can think of in this show who is important is white. And everybody who is in a role of, like, assistant or service or the blackjack dealer or the, you know, all
her manager, her business manager,
Ava's CEO girlfriend, like, all of these people, they are the people of color.
They serve
and they fill the ranks. Yeah. It's not a white show in the sense that, like, there's a lot of people of color in the show, but it definitely, when you sit and you critique it through that lens, there is definitely there's some missing representation there for sure.
Her CEO, her brand manager guy, who is gay and black, is not too much of a character for the first season and a half, I would say.
Yeah.
Especially in the third season, there's a lot of depth added. So, you know, there's more of him and there's more of that, but it's definitely, the show is pretty white in that regard.
And maybe that's because, you know, I mean, in the sense that this side of Hollywood, especially when it comes to comedy, is white.
Yeah.
The people that are making the most money and it is a good, you know, I don't know. It's just something to think of, because it's easy to look at this cast and go, oh my gosh, there's so much good racial representation in this show. But you have to think a little more critically when you look at who is being shown as having power and who is being shown as having to like suck it up and do whatever the rich lady says. It's interesting.
The one thing I think we should talk about for sure is there are some specific episodes or storylines about confronting like comedy that hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
And in the third season, there is an episode where Deborah is going to her old university to speak and to get an honorary degree. And some of the students put together a supercut of some of the most racist and offensive jokes or material from her, you know, 60-year career.
Her late night appearances, right. Her televised specials, yes. The things she's done. Yep.
And so while it may have been spread out over a very long career to the point where you might not say it's, you know, her whole act is racist, mm-hmm. when you put it in a supercut together, all of a sudden it really paints a picture of, you know, the jokes she's used.
It's like in The Office when they cut together all of the times Jim has pranked Dwight. And then they cut back to Jim and Jim's like, well, when you put them all together like that, it looks bad. Yeah. And it's like, does.
So she gets, you know, protested on a college campus. It's like a story that is a very real story. It's a thing that happens.
And right? She's already double booked. So she's canceling on Pride to be at this student thing.
And so, you know, I guess you could say it's a cancel culture episode, right? Mm-hmm. And she's incredibly resistant to anyone pointing out that these jokes are racist or that she made a mistake by saying that, like, it was a different time then. Mm-hmm. You could, you know, the rules were different. Like, you know, you can't, basically saying you can't hold me responsible for something that was acceptable then that's not acceptable now.
And she says that to Ava.
She does.
And Ava's like, nah.
Right. She tells her how it is. I think, you know, the episode kind of that storyline concludes with her going to a Q&A where the students are able to voice their concerns about her old material, how it affected them, why it's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. She plays a very active listening role, participant in the you know, conversation.
She even says, I could defend every reason I know, but I'm gonna just sit here and listen.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, it's a little like maybe just a tiniest bit like kind of patting itself on the back a little bit in that way, but I thought it was a really good example of someone being you know, impulsively defensive about that sort of thing and how they got over it.
Something I really like about that too. So I mentioned how she, you know, it's the classic, oh, they're double booked. She was double booked with Pride.
Yeah.
And she cancels on Pride, including a personal event for VIPs where she was going to be signing merch that they bought of hers. And she cancels, and it's, you know, it's mostly gay men that were there for this. And one of the men is talking to her business manager, who's also a gay man, and he's saying, she's not coming, I'm sorry. And the guy's like, oh, that's okay. You know, we love her. And other people need to see her right now. And, you know, she's having a moment and she's getting really popular. And I know there's some of the OG fans who they feel like it's not fair because she's not all ours anymore. But, you know, we were always here and we'll be here. And I think that's really interesting because it's very easy, I think, especially in comedy, to abuse or ignore the fans who have always been there for you in chasing the new fans.
Taking
them for granted. And so for some people that can look like, to some people that looks like this company is pushing its games woke agenda and they're leaving fans like me behind. Sure. That's not how I mean it. If that's your opinion, get fucked. But honestly, even if you're like fans like me aren't getting the same attention we used to get because this person's getting more popular, there is definitely like that entitlement feeling that can come from audiences. And I really liked that they had him voice this. We get to share her with more people. Yeah. How can that ever be bad that more people love her? More people think we've always thought she was this funny. Like, I'm glad other people are seeing it. And I think there's a whole really big conversation that happens over these three seasons about how comedy is a conversation between the audience and the comedian.
Yeah.
And how what you like, you know, at some point Ava convinces Deborah to be like, she's like, you got to just start telling stories from your life. When you tell these stories, they're so funny. And you've lived through some crazy shit people would love to hear about, but also like, you know, but it means being open and honest. And it means like, you know, making yourself the joke to some degree.
Confronting things that you don't even want to talk about.
And when she starts doing that, she starts getting what she can hear is like genuine laughter. And then she gets so popular with these stories and these like this like observational, you know, biographical humor that now she's going on the road in season three and people are laughing when she says anything.
She can't test out new material because people are just accept that she's funny and are ready to laugh.
Like she'll get up on stage and say, wow, there's a lot of you. And everyone howls laughter. And she's like, yeah, I guess I wasn't expecting it to be this big of a crowd. And then they're laughing and cheering. And she's like, well, I thought I'd start out with some new stuff and more howling. And it's like, okay. And then she's like, so I went to the grocery store the other day and everyone laughs and cheers. She's like, that's not, I haven't even.
Super just, unfulfilling.
And it just. And I think that's also a really interesting thing about, you know, when you reach a certain level of fame, a certain level of notoriety that you can't even like say the joke anymore.
The
you
food
can't
turns to ashes in your mouth.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's really, as someone who's never been interested in being famous, but who does perform, you know, I thought it was a fascinating show. I absolutely loved it.
It's a great show. It's got good characters. I think Molly and I both have a fairly low threshold for drama plot lines hanging around too long or not going anywhere. And the show kept us going. I would say, you know, for some reason we took a break before we didn't finish the second season for like months. We let it sit. And then the third season started up and we were like, why did we stop watching that show?
I think it was just, we watched so much TV. I think it was just one of those times where so much stuff came out. It just fell by the wayside. I don't remember thinking, I don't want to watch this anymore or this is getting boring. But if you find season two is getting boring, stick with it.
Right. Yeah. Because we definitely started season two back up and like just crushed through the rest of it and watched the end of the second half of season three as it came out. And it's great. Half hour episodes and like 10 episode seasons, I think. So it's really easy to kind of go through.
I will say if you have any kind of, if you're still listening and you are thinking about watching this, if you have any kind of like real heavy sensitivity to somebody kind of being verbally abusive, there's a lot of that. Deborah Vance is a verbally abusive person and everyone in her life just sort of takes it.
She's kind of a piece of shit for a lot of the show.
And so if you have experienced that in your life and it makes you feel bad or you can't watch shows where someone's being that way, she's going to be that way. I will say that there is comeuppance there's that. But I mean, it may be a reason the show is not for you. I know some people can't handle cringe humor. This isn't that, but this is definitely like, she's mean. She gets mean to people.
There are people that don't want to see a redemption arc for a character that's a piece of shit.
Correct.
And that has no interest to them. And I think that's not all this show is. But this show is that, too.
Yeah. I think anybody who's interested in comedy.
Yeah.
And I would hope that that's you if you're listening to this. If that's not you, sorry, this isn't about geek stuff yet. But if that's you, if you're interested in comedy, if it's something that you like to either consume or perform, I think that you would really enjoy watching this show. I do think it's particularly if you are a woman or a non-binary performer, that these feelings of how comedy has always been a male-dominated world and how there's a lot of exploration here in how women think they have to change themselves, do have to change themselves, or sometimes maybe are holding on to old expectations and just assuming that it's still a boys' club and behaving as such. That's a big theme in season three for sure.
Yeah. I forgot that was something you wanted to talk about when we were talking about the, you know, the wokeness of the comedy. Is Deborah Vance goes to hang out with these old men comedians mm-hmm. who are legends in her, yeah. you know, in comedy.
They're all going to get colonoscopies together. Yeah, that's the thing they do.
It's a thing that old comedians do together. They talk shit while
they talk shit while they shit. Yeah. And that's she gets invited to the yeah. thing and she's
it's a big deal.
It's four men she would have died to have been in a room with 20 years ago.
And one of them says a couple of like off color comments and she kind of starts to call him on it. And then she kind of excuses herself. And then she comes back and she's like, I'm out of here, guys.
Yeah,
bye.
Fuck this.
Like, and just, I mean, there's consequences. She gets mad about it too because she is mad on behalf of Ava mm-hmm. because they're directly talking about her and queerness in some way. And Deborah's mad that she mm-hmm. is, you know, can't enjoy these friendships because these people are shitty and she's yep. now, you know, sensitive to that because there's someone in her life that's important to.
But then like, just like very soon after that, she gets booked on a cruise that she's told is a gay cruise, but it turns out to be a lesbian cruise.
Oh, that was, the cruise happens before
the cruise
that.
Happens first. Yep. Are you sure?
Positive.
Oh, okay. Well, in any,
pretty darn certain.
I don't know. I thought it was after that, but in any event, she gets invited on this cruise. And when she finds out it's a lesbian cruise, she's like, no, lesbians hate me. Gay men love me, but lesbians hate me. And
it's true.
And she tries to do her tired shtick and it's not really going well. And then she meets some women and talks and one of them flirts with her and oh my god, all of a sudden now the narcissist has exactly what she needs in that these women think I'm sexy and tries to like turn that up to 11 and it backfires spectacularly.
Yeah,
it's really great because it's like it feels very okay boomer. It feels very like, you know, you can't, to you, you're like, oh, it's a sex thing. It's like, it's not a sex thing. It's a sexual preference identity. It's a, not just women wanting to fuck each other on a boat, but there's plenty of that.
But there's a lot of that.
If you like ladies, let me tell you, if you're a lady who likes ladies, there's some good stuff in this show.
The episode, The Captain's Wife is in the second season. It's like episode 4.
Oh, wow.
And Join the Club is episode 4 of third season.
Wow, they're really so far apart.
Yeah.
Couldn't have even guessed it. That's crazy. Anyway, yeah, it's great. It's a great show. If you've got HBO Max, go ahead and watch it. If you don't, sail the high seas. You know, I would never say that we should steal from a corporation. That's
awful.
You
wouldn't download a car.
You wouldn't download an episode of Hacks or 3 seasons of it. Anyway, you should.
You wouldn't do it from like a private torrent tracker so that you're not IP address isn't in a publicly found tracking site. Like you wouldn't do that to a private torrent site. Like if you asked your friends if they had invitations to a private tracking torrent tracker.
And if you didn't do that, then you could always sign up for a free trial of HBO Max and then, watch it all very
yeah,
quickly.
Just go get another Gmail address and do it again. Fuck them.
We have been Geeks Without God without Tim. We will have Tim back next week. Thank you so much for indulging us these last 2 weeks as Nick and I tried to hold this show on our own.
Recreate the magic.
Oh my God, we did. Nick actually edited these 2 episodes. Tim is usually our editor and does all of the splicing and uploading. So congrats to Nick for figuring it out. Sorry, Tim, that we figured out that we don't need you now.
Yeah, now.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Hacks, more like racks, am I right? Because they're ladies.
Molly.
It's Pride Month.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time. You can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.